Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly with Sarah and Mike, your guide to the aviation industry. Welcome to Aviation Intelligence Weekly. I'm Sarah Chen, and joining me as always is Mike Hartley. Mike, today we're diving into General Dynamics 10Q filing for the second quarter of 2026, filed on July 29th. This is a company that sits at the intersection of business aviation and defense, and this quarter has some genuinely interesting dynamics worth unpacking.
Absolutely, Sarah. And before we get into the numbers, let me give listeners our core thesis for this episode, because I think it frames everything that follows. If we reduce this filing to one sentence, it's this. General Dynamics is executing a synchronized expansion across all four segments simultaneously, with aerospace leading on margin recovery and marine systems leading on volume, while defense mix headwinds in combat systems and technologies quietly offset some of that momentum.
That's a sharp framing. Where does that put them in the business cycle?
Based on this filing, General Dynamics is operating in mid-cycle expansion. Defense spending is elevated and rising. Commercial business jet demand is robust with a book-to-bill ratio of 1.5 to 1 in Q2, and the company is actively investing in capacity rather than harvesting it. That's not a late-cycle posture. That's a company leaning into a demand wave it believes has duration.
We'll come back and test that thesis at the end, but let's start with what actually changed versus the prior quarter filing.
So the filing itself notes that there are no significant material changes identified versus the prior filing, which is actually a signal in itself. What we're looking at is a continuation and acceleration of trends already in motion. Consolidated revenue came in at $52.55 billion on a trailing basis, and the MD&A is explicit that revenue growth was driven by all four operating segments. That's not common. Usually you have one or two segments carrying the others.
And the operating income picture?
Operating income of $1.42 billion for the quarter, with consolidated operating margin up 40 basis points in Q2 and 20 basis points in the first half of 2026 compared to prior year periods. Now, 40 basis points of margin expansion might sound modest, but for a defense and aerospace prime contractor of this scale, where margins are structurally compressed by cost plus contract structures and long cycle program economics, that's meaningful sequential improvement. The defense prime peer group typically operates consolidated margins in the 8 to 12% range, and General Dynamics is threading that needle while simultaneously ramping capital expenditures.
Speaking of CapEx, that number jumped significantly.
It did. Capital expenditures increased 29% year over year to $437 million in the first half of 2026, and management explicitly states they expect further increases in the second half. That's a deliberate investment posture. The causality chain here is important. If this CapEx cycle is productive and translates into shipyard throughput and aircraft delivery capacity, it supports the revenue guidance management has laid out. But if supply chain constraints or workforce shortages absorb that investment without corresponding output gains, you start to see margin pressure without the volume benefit. That's the execution risk embedded in this filing.
Let's move into what management is actually saying in the MD&A, because the language they chose tells you a lot about how they're reading their own situation.
The tone in this filing is measured confidence, not euphoria. Management describes defense spending as being at, and I'm quoting directly here, increased levels, and the administration has publicly stated support for further increases. That's a carefully worded statement. They're not saying spending is guaranteed to rise. They're anchoring to a stated policy position and letting that do the work.
What about the shipbuilding commentary? That section felt particularly detailed.
It was, and for good reason. The MD&A states, again quoting directly, there is significant demand in U.S. Navy shipbuilding, particularly submarines. We have invested significantly in our facilities and workforce to increase production capacity to meet this demand and expect to continue to do so. That phrase, expect to continue to do so, is management signaling a multi-year investment commitment, not a one-quarter phenomenon. but they immediately follow that with an acknowledgement that, quote, the increased demand has placed pressure on the shipbuilding industrial base, which was already impacted by significant demographic issues coming out of the global pandemic. That's a candid admission that the constraint isn't capital. It's people and supply chain.
And on the aerospace side, the G800 gets a specific mention.
It does. Management notes the G800 entered service last year and frames it as a demand catalyst. The language is, quote, we believe our investments in a new family of Gulfstream aircraft will continue to fuel demand. The word believe is doing some work there. It's forward-looking and appropriately hedged. But the book-to-bill data backs it up. A 1.5-to-1 ratio in Q2 and 1.3-to-1 for the first half, even as revenue grew more than 10%, means orders are outpacing deliveries at a healthy clip. In the business aviation sector, a sustained book-to-bill above 1.2 is generally considered a strong demand signal.
There's also a tariff thread running through the aerospace commentary that I want to make sure we address.
Yes, and this is nuanced. Management acknowledges that the aerospace business has been impacted by, quote, inflationary pressures and ongoing tariffs. But then they disclose that in February 2026, the U.S. Supreme Court held that tariffs imposed under the International Emergency Economic Powers Act were unauthorized, and a phased refund process was established. Management states they've received some refunds already, but, and this is the key qualifier, the timing of collection of remaining tariff refunds is uncertain. They then conclude that tariffs, quote, as applied in their current form and tariffs yet to be refunded, are not material to our results of operations. So the headline is, not material. But the uncertainty around refund timing is a real cash flow timing variable worth watching.
Let's shift to the financial confirmation and red flag section. From a balance sheet standpoint, what does this filing tell us?
From a balance sheet standpoint, this is a company in solid shape with one structural nuance worth flagging. Cash and equivalents stand at $3.65 billion. Total debt is $1.75 billion. And long-term debt is $8.07 billion. So the gross debt picture is $8 plus billion. But net interest expense actually declined to $118 million in the first half of 2026, down from $177 million in the first half of 2025. Management attributes that to lower commercial paper borrowings. Full-year net interest expense is guided at approximately $270 million.
So the debt load is manageable relative to the cash generation profile?
That's the right framing. Management explicitly states that operating cash generation, supplemented by commercial paper, is considered sufficient for both short and long-term liquidity needs. There is no going concern language anywhere in this filing, not even close. The causality chain I'd flag is this. If the CapEx ramp continues into the second half as guided, and if tariff refunds are delayed, you could see a temporary working capital squeeze. But given the backlog of $136.5 billion, which is an extraordinary demand visibility number, the cash generation runway is long. For context, a backlog of that magnitude at current revenue run rates represents multiple years of contracted work.
That backlog number is staggering. Let's put it in perspective.
The combined estimated contract value, which includes options and potential follow-on work, reaches $186.9 billion. That's not a company scrambling for the next contract. That's a company managing a pipeline that extends well into the next decade. For defense primes, a backlog to revenue ratio above 3-to-1 is generally considered a strong demand buffer. General Dynamics is operating well above that threshold.
Let's talk about risk disclosures. The filing notes no new or significantly escalated risk factors versus the prior filing. But there are some sector-specific risks embedded in the narrative.
Right. The absence of new formal risk factors is itself informative. It means management doesn't believe the operating environment has materially deteriorated since last quarter. But the narrative risks are real. First, the Israel-based mid-cabin airframe supplier. Management specifically calls out, quote, delays, including at our Israel-based supplier of mid-cabin airframes, caused by conflicts in the Middle East. That's a geopolitical supply chain dependency that's actively causing disruption. It's not hypothetical.
And on the workforce side?
The shipbuilding workforce challenge is the most structurally complex risk in this filing. Management describes significant demographic issues coming out of the global pandemic, affecting the shipbuilding industrial base. Skilled trades in naval shipbuilding have long training cycles. You can't solve a workforce gap in a quarter or even a year. The filing notes they're working with the Navy to stabilize and grow the supply chain. But the language is collaborative and patient, not urgent and resolved. If submarine production ramp timelines slip because of workforce constraints, Marine Systems revenue guidance could face pressure.
What about the combat systems risk around the M10 Booker termination?
That's a discrete program-level event with a clear disclosure. The filing states that U.S. military vehicle revenue decreased, quote, due to lower U.S. Army demand as part of its recapitalization efforts and the termination of the M10 Booker program. Management also says, quote, we expect short-term combat vehicle production volumes to be down slightly. The word short-term is doing important work there. It's management's way of signaling this is a transition, not a structural decline, but it does create a near-term revenue headwind in that product line.
Let's go deeper on the segment breakdown, because the divergence between segments is really the heart of this story.
It is. You have four segments, and they're telling four different stories. Aerospace is the standout performer. Operating margin expanded 130 basis points in Q2 and 100 basis points year to date. The 2026 outlook is $13.8 billion in revenue at approximately 14.7% operating margin. For a business aviation segment, 14.7% is a healthy margin. Gulfstream has historically operated in the mid-teens, so this is consistent with the segment's historical range and trending in the right direction.
Marine Systems is the volume story.
Exactly. Marine Systems is guiding to approximately $18 billion in 2026 revenue. That's the largest segment by revenue guidance, at approximately 7.4% operating margin. The margin is lower than aerospace, but that's structurally expected for shipbuilding, where cost-plus contracts and long-cycle program economics compress margins. The 40 basis point improvement in Q2 on, quote, improved performance at each of our shipyards is a positive signal that the capacity investments are beginning to translate into operational efficiency.
And then combat systems and technologies are the mixed picture segments.
Both saw margin compression, and both attribute it to the same cause, program mix. Combat Systems is guiding to $9.8 billion in revenue at 13.8% margin. The margin decline is real, but the absolute level is still strong. Technologies is guiding to $14.1 billion in revenue at 9.4% margin, down 20 basis points. The revenue growth in technologies is driven by, quote, higher volume across several C5ISR programs, particularly systems supporting a variety of land and air platforms and international programs. So you have volume growth with margin dilution. That's a mixed story, not an efficiency story.
Let's bring it home. What should traders and analysts be watching going forward, and where could our thesis be wrong?
Management has given us clear guideposts. The four segment outlooks are explicit. Aerospace at $13.8 billion and 14.7% margin. Marine at $18 billion and 7.4%. Combat at $9.8 billion and 13.8%. And technologies at $14.1 billion and 9.4%. Corporate costs are expected to be approximately $180 million for the full year. The effective tax rate is guided at approximately 17.5%. Net interest expense at approximately $270 million. These are tight, specific numbers. Management is giving you a detailed scorecard.
What are the key monitoring metrics?
Three things. First, watch the aerospace book-to-bill ratio in Q3. A 1.5 to 1 in Q2 is exceptional. If that sustains or improves, the demand thesis is intact. If it drops below 1 to 1, the pipeline is thinning. Second, watch Marine Systems' throughput on Columbia-class submarines. The filing is explicit that this is the primary volume driver, and any production schedule slippage would be a direct hit to the $18 billion revenue guide. Third, watch for tariff refund disclosures. Management said timing is uncertain. Any acceleration in refunds is a cash flow positive that isn't currently priced into guidance.
And the counter thesis. Where could we be wrong about the mid-cycle expansion positioning?
Here's the honest counter thesis. If the Army's recapitalization review extends beyond the short-term window management described, and if the M10 Booker termination is followed by additional program restructurings, combat systems could face a more sustained revenue headwind than the filing implies. Simultaneously, if the Israel-based airframe supplier disruption worsens due to escalating Middle East conflict, airspace delivery schedules could slip, compressing the 14.7% margin target. If both of those happen concurrently, combat systems volume down more than guided and airspace deliveries delayed, our mid-cycle expansion thesis weakens considerably and starts to look more like a late-cycle plateau with execution risk on both flanks.
What would prove us definitively wrong?
Two specific data points. If the Q3 aerospace book-to-bill ratio falls below 1-to-1, while Marine Systems reports a production schedule delay on Columbia-class, that combination would directly contradict the synchronized expansion thesis we opened with. That would tell you demand is softening in the commercial segment at the same moment the defense capacity investment is failing to convert into output. And that's a fundamentally different story than what this filing tells.
Final framing thought?
From a valuation framing perspective, with a backlog of $136.5 billion, four segment revenue growth, and margin expansion in the two highest margin segments, this equity is priced like a company with durable, multi-year demand visibility, which is exactly what the filing supports. The mid-cycle expansion thesis holds through the full weight of evidence in this filing. The risks are real, but they're disclosed, bounded, and manageable given the backlog depth. General Dynamics is not a company running out of runway. It's a company deciding how fast to run.
That's a clean close, Mike. To our listeners, everything discussed today is grounded exclusively in General Dynamics' 10Q filing for Q2 2026, filed July 29th. Nothing in this episode constitutes investment advice. We are analysts of filings, not advisors on positions. I'm Sarah Chen.
And I'm Mike Hartley. We'll see you next week on Aviation Intelligence Weekly.